Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to the NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Nancy DeFranks, and our old friend, Tom Timmerman, just back from Sunsplash to Winnipeg, where he covered the first two games of the series. So, fellas, let's jump right in. I'll throw it to Tom first. Blues had a seemed to find a little higher level in game two, but boy, Winnipeg's a handful. It's a big, sturdy team, and the Blues are up against it now.
Yeah, and they, you know, they got to figure out what to do with that, the Scheifele, you know, and Connor there, who just have lots of chances and are going to score them if they get enough of them. And so that's a problem. I mean, they've got, you know, Connor's got the game winner in the first two games. They have to make a focus there, and they're hoping better matchups when they get back home. They have more control there. Maybe they can change things because they're looking for just like one little thing, because that's kind of what's happened in these games. They've been one goal games and they just got to kind of flip a switch, but it's a tough switch to flip.
Yeah. Matt, you saw, you know, how this series unfolded all season. And I think that last game in Winnipeg, where again, you're dealing with the Jets, who are really in playoff mode, where they just, the Blues just got shut down up there in that last game. And there is just, that's a team with structure, with discipline. It's well coached and it's big and it's a handful.
Yeah. And, you know, I think they haven't played poorly. The third periods aside, I guess those have been rough ones to watch, both in game one and game two. But that first period that they had in game two, I thought was really good. I mean, if Snuderud doesn't score there at the end of the first, and they go down 1-0 into first intermission, I think you're probably pretty disappointed to be in that spot, just given how well they actually did play in that period of hockey. So, I think they've been okay at 5-on-5. You know, obviously they scored 3 goals in the power play. And as Tom mentioned, that top line for Winnipeg, Scheifele's got 5 points. The Jets have scored 7 goals. So he's been in on 5 of the 7 goals they've scored in the series so far. And, you know, as you mentioned, like, just being a bounce or two away, a little bit away, that has been kind of the story for them the first two games. When you look at the goals that have been scored against them, Scheifele gets a bounce off of Suter's stick in game one. He gets a bounce off of Snuderud's skate in game two. Pareko, you know, accidentally takes away Binnington's stick in game two. And then even in game one, there was some rough bounces. I mean, just a deflection in the slot that, you know, is a skill play too. But it's been tough just knowing that they've played okay. You know, they haven't played to their best. They haven't played to their worst. And they've come home down 2-0.
Well, Tom, I wanted to hit right off the top something positive. Early in that game too, Jimmy Snuggerud was driving some play. He was creating some opportunities. Mm-hmm. And ultimately got rewarded with a very nice snipe at the end of the period on just as the power play was going there. It's hard for him to jump right from college to the pros, especially against a big physical team like this in this environment. But given the circumstances, I guess I'd have to grade him as a plus so far.
Yeah, I don't think it has been hard for him to jump. I mean, it's a big jump, but he seems to be handling it as though nothing has changed. So yeah, that's been a really impressive thing as to how game ready he has been at this level to do what he did. And he made a big step as they changed lines for him for game two. And he went from 2 shot attempts to 7 shot attempts on that. He got like 4 more minutes of ice time and making the most of it. And he is a factor, and he is the offense for a lot of this team so far.
Now, Matt, we talked in our last go-round in the net front about the possibility of, would you see Tyler Tucker? And they did. The Blues did see him. Interesting decision going 11-7 with really Nick Leddy taking fewer minutes and Tucker playing some with his physicality. This is an element that's badly needed in this series, but you also need to be really, really good in your own defensive zone coverage. So, what was your take on the use of going to Tucker, using his physicality, getting him in the mix? And then the other aspect of that is you're kind of boiling down your forward usage, leaning pretty hard on your top guys, and probably a little, maybe just slightly harder than you were, but it's an interesting decision. And would you expect with the team coming back home and having the last, change, do you expect that we'll see this going forward?
Yeah, I think that then, the matchups part of it did have a decent amount to do with it. I know just from, speaking to Montgomery in the past, he's kind of liked using 11-7 sometimes as a way to just be more involved as a coach and, go with the hot hand, whether that's up front or on D. And as you mentioned, I mean, Tucker and Leddy basically played about the same minutes. And I think we did see maybe another young mistake from one of these guys making their postseason debuts, and Tucker gets a penalty in game two after Neighbors and Bull Duke each get one in game one. So there are still some learning. It's a learning process for a lot of these guys still. And when they come home, I don't really know what to expect from lineup wise, just because I don't know how much they really want to use Matthew Joseph. Like, are they really getting a lot more out of having him as the 12th forward versus the versatility that they would get by using seven defensemen or even by using 11 forwards and double shifting guys when they're playing well? And the fact is, like, when you have 11 forwards, you end up using the top guys a lot more. And, as you mentioned, Jimmy Snuggerud, 20 minutes the other night, like, he was a guy that benefited from that. Thomas, 23, 13. Buchnevich 22-47, and you still had guys like Torbchenko and Faxa and Walker in the the 10 to 12 minute range. So you're able to spread minutes to where you want them and where the game dictates, where the players dictate it. So the I guess the opportunity cost of having Matthew Joseph in the lineup versus the versatility that you would have just in terms of moving pieces around, do the Blues really value that much?
Yeah, I think it's notable that Snuggerud is the one playoff debutant who has not committed a penalty so far. So is the other, he's been able to, I think, to handle his emotions in this thing more than the others are. Yeah, and I think they get more out of playing those guys more than they do out of playing Matthew Joseph. But also with the way the schedule is right now, with these 2 day breaks in between these next 3 games, a few extra minutes is, I don't think, is going to bother these guys.
Now let's talk about the physicality of the game, because you made the trek to Manitoba at great personal sacrifice, since it's not the easiest place to get to. You came mere seconds away from getting to go to Vegas instead, but we won't
Yeah.
relive that horror.
20 seconds.
Was it 20.1 or whatever? Yeah, it was just horrifying watching that unfold before us in the press box. But boy, this is big boy hockey. They came out game one, Braden Schenn, the captain, trying to set a tone. And man, that is a team on the other side. Their captain, his physical player, their defense, they got a couple of defensemen who are huge hitters. Braden's brother's a load. Logan Stanley's a load. So man, just talk about the physicality of those first two games, and again, why there was a temptation to at least get Tucker some shifts so he could throw his body around. They had 5 hits on D, and he had 4 of them in just 9.5 minutes.
The hit numbers from the first period of the first game were just unreal. I mean, it was almost as though you thought, this can't possibly be true. I mean, the number of hits were like, more than minutes. It was just out of control. Braden Schenn has 7. It was, yeah. And that's what it was. I mean, it was just every play, someone was getting hit somewhere. And the Blues had made no secret about it. I mean, they were like, these first 10 minutes, we want to come out hard and strong and play this. And they did. Now, did it wear them down? I mean, the numbers obviously were not the same in periods 2 and 3. But yeah, it's they wanted to try to kind of assert what they did, and Montgomery felt if they did well in the first how they started would be indicative. They get off to a good first 10 minutes, that would set a good tone for them. It worked until they got to the third period. But then you saw in game two, Logan Stanley just, I mean, knocked Jordan Kyrou into the air with that hit in front of the along the boards. And Kyrou technically didn't miss a shift, but there was a penalty that followed, and so there was a it was a penalty kill that he didn't have to be on the ice for. So there was a gap that he didn't have to play. But yeah, I mean, he went off the ice. You could tell that it was a little, that he was fuzzy. He was on the bench. He had his glove off. He was, looking at it, they were retightening his helmet because it probably had been knocked loose somehow. So that was a that was Winnipeg can hit too. So yeah, it makes it fun to watch. I mean, those two games, just on those bases alone, were really entertaining hockey games.
Yeah, and I think back to just some of the big hits. I mean, Faxa on Luke Shen behind the net right before he takes a tripping penalty. There's Shen in front of the Jets bench when he takes on Lowry there, and I think it was Lowry who kind of stapled Suter behind the net one time. Like, there's been a ton of big hits, and this actually it takes me back to Jim Montgomery's transition from college to coaching the NHL. Like, he has always been a process-oriented coach. That's what he calls himself. He actually had in college a 7-point process of, things to evaluate game to game, whether you won or lost, and that would tell you, whether you played a good game or not. And one of the things that he had in college was 50 hits in a game, and he dropped that when he got to the NHL because he looked at it and said, "There's no way that we can do 50 hits in a game. That's just not feasible or possible." And we look at the hit total in game one, and the Blues had 53 hits. And you see how they played that game, how many hits there were, and you can understand why that bullet point was left in college, I guess now 7 years ago. So the fact that they came out and played that way, and you're right, Tom, maybe it did wear him down in the third period, because that third period in game one just wasn't didn't have any sort of life for the Blues. And even in game two, it wasn't as physical. There were some bigger hits, I guess we can agree on, just not as many of them. And the third period there, I still didn't love that what they turned in. When you go into the third tie game and then you fall behind early and you're not able to really get a push going much at all, really. So maybe the hits wore him down, but it also, I think, maybe dulled the effect of the Winnipeg whiteout, right? Like, that building, like, Tom, like, this is probably a nice reminder for you about what game one on the road feels like when you go there, and in a Canadian market especially, what the building feels like, how juiced it can be.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Winnipeg was psyched about this one, and it's really something you almost have to see to fully appreciate it, because it's all white. I mean, you look through the crowd and there's like the occasional Blues fan, but like every Winnipeg fan is wearing white, and obviously they give them T-shirts to help that along. But I went to Easter Mass on Sunday. There was actually somebody in church wearing their Patrick Laine jersey, so that was their Easter finest that they broke out. And it wasn't like a kid. I mean, it was like a 60-year-old man who was wearing his Patrick Laine jersey to Easter Mass. So it was, yeah, it's the noise, the atmosphere. There, players talk about it, it's like brighter in there because with the reflections off of things. Montgomery was saying he may have to wear a hat to keep down the glare. But yeah, it's an intense experience, and the fact that that's a small building really confines everything there. But all day long, you see everyone walking around town wearing white, and they probably don't have hockey tickets.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here, and you can shop it right from your couch. It's Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, score amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals. And get it all with fast and free shipping on everything. Yep, even the big stuff. Right to your door. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer. And did we mention they only last 5 days? So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the season before it fizzles out. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale now through July 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Well, I want to go to Matt and then Tom on this one. The Robert Thomas comes back from injury, and so does Colton Parayko. They come into a tough series, and both guys are having matchup issues in terms of how it's working out for them 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. And so it's not easy coming back and then jumping into both guys' lower body situations. Mm-hmm. Both guys coming back into just an all-out war of a series, played at high speed and high physicality. And they've got a tough matchup against the top group with Winnipeg, if that's the matchup that they'll continue with. So just kind of both you guys kind of talk about the challenge ahead for Robert and Colton, knowing that they came in off of some issues and now they've jumped into it. And they're, I guess, what, each of them are -4 now?
Yeah, I mean, I have less concerns about Thomas than I do about Parayko. Yeah, we see the production from that Shifley line, but I still feel like we've seen a decent amount of positive, of good stuff from, you know, the Thomas line, that you can trust that they can get going a little bit more on home ice. And so, you know, he's someone who obviously we know drives play pretty well, can set up teammates pretty well. And I think that he's been good. I think he's been fine. You know, I don't worry too much about what Robert Thomas has done. Parayko, I think he's had a bit of a rough series up there. Obviously, some things stick out more than others when you're around the net front for multiple goals that go in. You know, the underlying numbers are not all that favorable for Parayko either. I know it's just two games and they're both on the road and he's going against top competition, but you know, when you look at two games and expected goals at 5-on-5 is about 37%. That's just not where you want to be for a top D pair that's going to be trusted with these tough matchups and trusted to win those tough matchups.
Yeah, I don't know that we see anything definite about Thomas on the ice, but I do know that, you know, after each game, we ask to talk to Thomas after the game, and we have not spoken to Thomas after the game. So the little paranoia radar says, why does he not want to meet with the media after the game? So, it's clear, and it's the postseason hockey, and so guys are going to play through anything to be on the ice, and that's one of the things it's part of the game, and guys are going to go out there if limbs are attached by the last tendon. I mean, that's what they will do.
Yeah. And I guess the first warning sign for the Thomas stuff, right? Like he misses the third period of a game where they're up big and they're going to clinch a playoff spot. And I think even though Montgomery deemed it as precautionary, I think we all kind of understood that even if it was precautionary, you could just sit him on the bench and have him sit there and not play him, right? But he was mm-hmm. back in the room. And then they have a day off, and then they come back to practice, and he's not on the ice then. So that's 2 days off, plus missing the third period. And we did see him on practice, when they did practice before game one. And obviously he's played the first two games. But yeah, when you have a day off and you miss practice after the day off, then there's an indication there that there's something to be dealt with.
Well, we are in the net front presence with our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks, and our old friend, Tom Timmerman, thrown back into the fray up in Winnipeg, back in here in the STL. So let's talk about the net front. And this has been an issue that Jim Montgomery certainly addressed after game one of needing to be better here and in the slot. And also it's still an issue in game two. So Jordan Binnington gets run over. Jordan Binnington gets backed over, and there's also problems with giving up goals right around the net. So I'll start with Tom on that. Easier said than done in today's NHL, keeping things clear there, because you just can't cross-check people mercilessly or latch onto them and drag them away like a tow truck like you did in the old days. But boy, this is something that has to be addressed.
Four of Winnipeg's seven goals so far have been from within 10 feet, and another one was like 14 feet. So they are getting in close. While the Blues don't have many shots at all from in close, they're getting stuff from the blue line and getting stuff from the circles, but they're not getting things in front of the net. So yeah, obviously that has to be rectified. And Montgomery talked about they need to be net hungry. They need to go to the net more. And that's going to be, I think, got to be a point of emphasis here for game three, because that's where you find the goals. That's where Winnipeg is finding the goals, and that's where the Blues are going to have to get to.
Yeah, I think if you just look at the goals that the Blues have scored, right? So you have Thomas on the power play. That was a shot from the circle that had a screen. You had Sundqvist on kind of a rebound in the slot area. You had Kyrou screenshot from distance, and you had Snuderud kind of another shot from distance. Like, these are shots that honestly you wouldn't even think that they would be going in on a goalie like Connor Hellebuck. You don't think that you'd just be beating him from distance more than you beat him on the inside. And Tom, as you mentioned, at 5-on-5, those four goals for Winnipeg right around the net. And the fifth one was Connor's game winner in game one, where it's a face-off play. He kind of gets lost in the middle of the ice and just kind of drifts back to that circle. So, we can kind of call it a lost coverage in the slot area that ended up being an open shot from the circle. And I know, Tom, you're a big you like analytics and numbers, and you look at the heat map, and Winnipeg is just everything that they're getting is right in front, as you said, and the Blues are not quite generating as much there.
Well, this challenge going forward, containing these two guys in particular, interesting combination. Mark Scheifele is a big center who can control the puck. He's a goal scoring center. He's also a playmaker. Not overly physical, but he has been dialed in this year, and he can protect, and he can get where he needs to get, and he's a handful because of that. And Kyle is a sort of a classic shooter. We saw him execute numerous spins in game one there, and but that's not really his game. His game is getting to a spot. They talk about those two having good spacing, good chemistry, like Brett Hull back in the day. Kyle can get to a spot, find that quiet ice, and then boom, that one timer, particularly from the right circle, is deadly. So, containing these two, any ideas, Tom? You have anything you can share that you gave to Coach Montgomery?
No, I mean, Jim Montgomery far more skilled at determining what they got to do to these guys. But yeah, I mean, they are natural goal scorers. I mean, I think Connor had 41 and Scheifele had 39 in the regular season. These guys score goals. They are tough to stop. I mean, it's like the third highest, teammate total in the league. So it's a big challenge. And they're hoping that being at home, they get the matchups there, that's easier to do. But yeah, with this, Blues have got what they've got on defense, and they're going to have to figure out those matchups. One other thing, though, about Scheifele, another win Scheifele had before the game, after pregame warmups, and everyone heads back to the dressing room. But Joel Hofer for the Blues and Mark Scheifele for Winnipeg stay on the ice to see who could be the last one on the ice. And so Hofer's down on his end, and he's shooting pucks at the Winnipeg net, length of the ice, put in a couple, missed on most. Meanwhile, Scheifele's just skating around the end, and they're both seeing who can be the last one to leave. And it's probably 3, 4 minutes after the clock has hit zero, and everything, got to get the Zambonis out there, and they're both waiting. And finally, hometown kid Joel Hofer relented and left the ice to a big ovation from the Winnipeg fan base there, as Scheifele outlasted him.
I mean, who said backup goalies don't matter in the playoffs, huh? Like, this has been a thing for Scheifele for years, though, right? Like, I remember in Dallas, like, this Sagan had a similar thing where he always wanted to be the last one on the ice for warm up, and there have been times where Scheifele and Sagan will like rock paper scissor and see who gets off the ice first. But yeah, I mean, that's just a silly thing, and good for Joel Hofer for at least trying to do something as a backup goalie. But as far as Scheifele and Connor on the ice go, I was just looking up some of the matchup numbers from the regular season for Parayko against Scheifele and Connor, and I think he didn't play that last game against them, but he did get about a half hour on the ice against Scheifele, and And during that time, the Blues outshot the Jets 18-12. They outscored him 3-0. Like, it's not like he can't handle that assignment. It's maybe not that they need to find a different matchup for them. And even if you look at Connor versus Parayko, the Blues were up 13-12 in shots and 2-0 in goals. So again, small sample size, but it's not that he can't do it. It's just that he hasn't done it these first two games.
I want to give a shout out to the Jets here, and because in today's NHL, guys jump around, guys are unhappy, a lot of guys don't want to play in Winnipeg, right? And but Hellebuck and Scheifele agreed to they want to see this thing through. And Connor, as a young guy, signed a big contract. We'll see if he signs another one. Neil Pionk just re-upped. They've got some guys. They've had a group that's been together, their core group here. Again, it's not for everybody, you know. Pierre-Luc Dubois, not for everybody. Some guys like bouncing around the league, but I can't. Yeah, the Winnipeg's playing the Blues, and of course, here in St. Louis, you want to see the Blues go forward. It's far more interesting for us when the team does. Let's be honest here. But if you're a fan and you're not a Blues fan, and or maybe you're not a Blues, maybe you're just a fan of some other team. If the Blues get eliminated, I love the Winnipeg story. I mean, this is a tough market to succeed in. This management found a way to keep a group together. It's been around forever. A lot of success in the regular season. This is a team that desperate to play for the cup, to take the run. And I don't know. I don't know if this is the year they can do it. They'll get healthier as they go forward. But as you're watching this league evolve and where the big markets are going to have more power, I'd love to see Winnipeg take a run here. Tom, am I crazy to pull for Winnipeg? You're just up there. You got to hang out with the people. You got to sit next or near a guy with a Patrick Laine sweater in church, for God's sakes. So you feel the vibe.
Yeah, and they're friendly, kind people. I mean, it's and this is the optimistic time of year because spring is starting to arrive. It was still like around freezing when I got in there on Saturday or on Friday, but it was up into like the 50s, so it's this is the time of year. So there are all optimism runs rampant right now in Winnipeg, but it's got to be a tough sell for anybody anywhere. It's you talk about markets people want to go to, and Winnipeg's got to be, at the bottom of the list just because of where it is and what the winters are like and how it's just brutal up there. And it's got to be the most brutal winter. Edmonton, I guess, would give you a run, but it's a rough place. But the people couldn't be friendlier up there. I mean, good gosh, talk about chatty ushers, outside the dressing rooms. Delightful people there, but they, yeah, it's a tough place.
Yeah, it is good people up there. It brings me back to something that Doug Armstrong likes to say. He likes to say, like, everyone wants to play for a tax-free in a tax-free state, or they want to play for Original Six. So if the St. Louis Blues are doing everything perfectly, at best, they're clocking in at what, 13, 14, 15, whatever that ends up being. So you have that just against a team like the Blues and Winnipeg. I think you probably would think about, Buffalo, Calgary, just in terms of, franchises, locations. And even before, like, yeah, sure, Florida was nice before, but when the Panthers weren't good, like, who wanted to go there? Edmonton, like, that has changed completely with the arrival of McDavid and Draisaitl and the fact that they're a really good team. So it can be done turning, a city from not being a destination into a place where people want to go. And it's funny, last year when we were up in Winnipeg, that was when Gary Bettman was also in Winnipeg, having to address the fans. Like, he was talking to them last year about their attendance. Like, this was a Winnipeg Jets team that wasn't drawing in the smallest building in the league. Now, I guess at the time last year, they would have had Mullet to contend with, but they had to be kind of spurred on from the commissioner of the NHL, who flew into Winnipeg and had to, talk to people at the arena about going to the games. So this is also like not a this is a familiar story for Winnipeg. Like, this is the third iteration of the Jets, right? They're the last one is currently resides in Utah, I guess. You can trace the lineage, even though it's kind of an expansion team, but we know where they came from. So Winnipeg's gone through this before. They understand what it looks like, and I think you can also look at Edmonton and be like, hey, this is a market that wasn't desirable, that suddenly it is because they have a great player, one of the best players of all time, and they're winning on a consistent basis. And I think the other thing about the Jets that is, I guess, good to see for a team like the Blues is the Jets in 2018, like they were also in the one of the best teams in the league, and so many of those guys are still around on this team, you know, 5 to 7, which is not, I mean, obviously not a lot. It's been some time. But when you look at Scheifele or Ehlers or, you know, Morrissey, Hellebuyck, like those types of guys that have been there for a long time and they're able to make it to a Western Conference final in 2018 and then also win a President's Trophy in 2025, that's good for to look at and see how they built the rest of that roster around the few certain guys that have been there for a while.
Well, again, if normally we're going to cheer for Winnipeg, unfortunately, it's a little awkward since they're going against the Blues here. These are two teams that are very similar in terms of trying to overcome market size. They play a similar style, similarly ambitious. The one thing is the Blues have won a cup. They want to get back. The Jets want to break through. So we'll see what gives here. All right, for each of you guys here on the net front as we wrap up, what do you need to see in game three early on? That would indicate that maybe the series can change. We'll start with Tom.
I think the Blues need to score more goals. I think if the Blues can get out to, you know, a 2-0 something lead. I mean, they scored three on Hellebuyck in the first 22 minutes in game one and didn't win. I think that was a missed opportunity because you're not going to do that very often. I think they need to take a multi-goal lead early on in this game and play from ahead for a while. I think that'll be the big thing for them.
Yeah, I honestly would like to see a similar start as in game two. I mean, I thought that they were really good, particularly at 5-on-5 in that first period. You know, it was a little stunted because of the two penalties they took in that first. But I thought they played a really good period then. And so if they can kind of turn in a similar period at 5-on-5, not take some early penalties to stunt momentum, I think they'll be in good shape. So honestly, just have the same start as game two.
Well, that's Matt. I'm Jeff. We've heard from our old friend Tom Timmerman this week. Tom, you're going to be back next week for sure. We'll see about Matt. He's got some stuff going on. Definitely hear from Tom again next week. It's great to have you back in the net front.
My pleasure.
We'll have to get Jim Thomas back in at some point, bring alumnus in here to see what's going on. But we appreciate it, you guys. A reminder to all of our listeners that you can find all of our great content, extra content that you can't get in the fine print edition. All that cool stuff that we do on stltoday.com, our digital edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Appreciate your support of local journalism. Until next time, for Tom Timmerman, for Matthew DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. See ya.